All right, so today we are going to dive deep into contract law,
Okay.
and specifically a case that went all the way up to the California Court of Appeal, American Software, Anko v. Ali.
Interesting.
This is a wild case involving employment contracts, commission disputes, and a concept that I'm sure all of our listeners will perk their ears up at, which is unconscionability.
Yeah, this case, it really opens up the doors on what makes a contract so unfair that that it might actually be unenforceable.
Okay.
You know, we're talking about situations where the terms of a contract are so one-sided that they essentially shock the conscience of the court.
So let's set the scene a little bit. So we have Malena Lee, a sales executive, who ends up losing out on a significant amount of money, $30,000 in commissions,
Wow.
because of a clause in her contract with American Software.
Okay.
So tell me, is it even possible? Like, can a contract be so unfair that it's basically illegal?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. And that's where this whole idea of unconscionability comes in.
Okay.
You know, it's a legal principle that acts as a safeguard against contracts that are just fundamentally unfair.
I'm all ears. So break it down for me. Like, what exactly makes a contract unconscionable in the eyes of the law?
Well, you know, it's not a simple yes or no answer.
Right.
Courts use this two-prong test to determine unconscionability.
Got it.
So first, they look at procedural unconscionability,
Okay.
which examines the fairness in how the contract was formed. So, you know, was there a power imbalance between the parties? Was one party pressured or misled into signing the
I
contract?
see.
And then the second prong is substantive unconscionability.
Okay.
And that focuses on the terms of the contract themselves. So are they so one-sided or oppressive that they shock the conscience?
Interesting. So it's not just about the outcome, but about the process and the terms themselves as well. All right,
Exactly.
let's get back to Melanie Lee and her situation. What exactly was in that contract that cost her so much money?
Well, the really contentious part of Ollie's contract was this clause that stipulated that she would forfeit commissions on any payments received more than 30 days after her resignation,
Oh.
even if she'd secured those sales while she was still employed by the company.
Wait, so even though she did the work, she brought in the client, she doesn't get paid just because the payment arrived a little late.
Yeah, that's right.
That seems so harsh.
Yeah, you can definitely see why Ollie would feel that way.
Right.
And actually, the initial trial court actually agreed with her,
Right.
but then the case went up to the California Court of Appeal, and they had a very different take on the situation.
Okay, so walk me through the Court of Appeals reasoning here.
Sure.
Did they not find anything procedurally unconscionable about how this contract was formed?
Exactly. So the Court of Appeal, they overturned the trial court's decision, finding no evidence of procedural unconscionability. And they pointed out that Ollie was, you know, a seasoned sales executive. She had experience negotiating contracts, and she even had her own lawyer review this particular
Oh,
contract.
wow.
And you know, plus she was earning a solid base salary of $75,000.
So they basically said, hey, she knew what she was signing.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, the court really viewed this as a negotiated agreement between two sophisticated parties who knew what they were getting into.
Right.
There wasn't really any indication that American Software, you know, used their position to kind of pressure or mislead Ali into signing something she didn't understand.
Okay.
You know, that kind of power imbalance is often a really key factor in procedural unconscionability, and it just wasn't present here.
That makes sense, but what about the actual result?
Yeah.
Losing out on $30,000 just because of a payment delay still feels, I don't know, pretty outrageous. So didn't the Court of Appeal think that the terms of the contract were substantively unconscionable?
That's where things get really interesting.
Okay.
So you're right, the outcome for Ali does seem unfair on the surface.
Yeah.
But remember, the court's focus isn't really on the specific result in this case,
Yeah.
but on whether the contract terms themselves are so egregious that they, like we said before, shock the conscience.
Right.
And in this case, they didn't find the commission forfeiture clause to be all that shocking.
I'm curious. So what was their reasoning for that decision?
Well, they brought up a couple of key points.
Okay.
So firstly, they highlighted that, you know, this kind of clause is actually not all that uncommon in sales contracts.
Okay.
It's a way for companies to kind of protect their interests and mitigate the risk of paying commissions on deals that might fall through after a salesperson leaves.
So there's like a built-in risk allocation at play here.
Precisely, yeah. So the company kind of takes on the risk of potentially paying commissions on deals that go south.
All right.
While the salesperson takes on the risk of delayed payments, it's a give and take, you know, that's written right into the contract itself.
But couldn't you argue that this case, this specific case, tipped the scales way too far in the company's favor?
Yeah.
Like a 30-day window seems, I don't know, pretty tight, especially considering that she'd already secured these sales.
It's a valid point.
Right.
And I'm sure a lot of people would agree with that sentiment. But
yeah. But
the court's decision here really hinges on the fairness of the contract at the time it was signed.
Okay.
Not on how things shake out later on down the line.
So essentially, even if the outcome feels unfair in hindsight,
right,
the contract might still hold up legally if it was initially negotiated fairly and doesn't contain terms that are outrageously one-sided.
That's a key takeaway here.
Right.
And it's something to keep in mind, you know, when you're reviewing and drafting contracts, it's crucial to think not just about the best case scenario, but also about how things could potentially go wrong.
For sure.
And how to protect your clients in those situations.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you have to think about the worst case scenario, which I'm sure we all do as lawyers.
Yeah, all the time.
But especially when it comes to contracts, you know, you really want to make sure that you're buttoned up.
Definitely.
And that your client is protected.
Right.
This case really highlights the fact that contracts can have some serious consequences.
Absolutely.
Especially when it comes to something as important as your income.
Yeah, for sure.
So what does all this mean for our listeners who are, drafting employment contracts or advising clients on these matters?
Well, I think this case really serves as a powerful reminder that clarity is paramount when you're drafting these types of agreements.
Okay.
So, you know, when you're dealing with commission clauses, for example,
yeah,
you need to be crystal clear about what triggers the right to a commission. When those commissions are considered earned.
Right.
And what happens if the employee decides to leave the company, don't leave any room for ambiguity or interpretation.
So it's all about being meticulous with the language.
Yes.
Making sure everything's spelled out in black and white.
Absolutely, yeah.
So and it's not just about the language itself, but also about the process, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So you want to document everything. If there are negotiations, if the employee suggests changes to the contract, keep a detailed record of all of it.
Right.
And that helps demonstrate that the agreement was reached in a fair and transparent manner.
Right.
And wasn't simply dictated by the employer.
Right, exactly.
So it's like building a solid paper trail that protects everyone involved.
Exactly. It shows that there was genuine, back and forth, that the employee had the opportunity to understand and even influence the terms of the contract.
Right.
And this really reinforces that idea of an arm's length negotiation between two parties with equal bargaining power.
Okay.
Which is so crucial when defending against any claims of procedural unconscionability down the line.
It's funny, this makes me think about all those online contracts that, you know, we just blindly click agree on without even reading them.
Yeah.
Those probably wouldn't hold up very well in court, would they?
Well, that's a whole other can of worms. But you do raise a very valid point.
Yeah.
In the realm of employment contracts, especially those involving, more complex compensation structures like commissions.
Right.
It's vital that both parties are really on the same page.
Okay.
And that the agreement is clear and unambiguous.
So just to kind of sum it up, even though the outcome in the Ali case might seem, you know, a little harsh, it really underscores the importance of well-drafted contracts and a careful, considered negotiation process.
You couldn't have said it better myself.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for our listeners out there, I think it's a great reminder to always advise your clients to thoroughly review and fully grasp any contract before they sign on the dotted line.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Solid advice.
Yeah.
Now, I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier, which is industry standards.
Okay.
So the court in the Ali case noted that these commission forfeiture clauses are fairly commonplace in sales contracts.
Right.
So how much weight does that factor carry when a court is determining whether a contract term is unconscionable?
It's definitely a significant consideration. Okay. You know, courts generally aim to uphold contracts that reflect standard practices within a particular industry.
Right.
You know, they don't really want to rewrite contracts or impose their own ideas of fairness if the terms are generally in line with what's considered acceptable in that specific field.
So if everyone's doing it, it's probably okay.
Well, it's not quite as simple as that. Yeah. You know, just because something is common practice doesn't automatically make it, you know, fair or legally sound.
Right.
But it does provide some important context.
Yeah.
So the court will really examine whether the clause in question aligns with that standard industry practice and whether it reflects a reasonable allocation of risk between the parties involved.
So it's like the court is saying, hey, if you're playing by the generally accepted rules of the game.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to intervene and change those rules just because someone's unhappy with the outcome of a particular play.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
Right.
You know, the court is essentially trying to strike this balance between, you know, protecting employees from contracts that are truly unfair or exploitative and upholding that fundamental principle of freedom of contract.
Yep.
You know, the idea that parties should generally be free to enter into agreements as they see fit.
This case really highlights the importance of not only understanding the legal principles at play,
mm-hmm.
but also understanding the practical realities and customs of the industry you're dealing with.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. And for legal professionals, you know, it underscores the importance of staying informed about industry trends and best practices when advising clients on contract related matters.
Or before we wrap up, I have one final question that's been kind of nagging at me.
Okay.
This case really zeroes in on the fairness and the legality of the contract itself.
Mm.
But what about the broader implications? Like,
yeah.
What impact do these kinds of commission structures, especially these forfeiture clauses,
right.
have on employees in the long run?
That's a really insightful question. And while the court in this case was primarily focused on the legality of the contract, it does raise some significant questions about the potential long-term consequences of these types of compensation structures for sales professionals.
Like, what can you give me some examples?
Sure. Yeah. So for starters, it can create a situation where employees might feel hesitant to leave their jobs.
Okay.
Even if they're dissatisfied or have other opportunities, because they're afraid of losing out on those hard-earned commissions.
So it's almost like a financial disincentive to move on.
Exactly. Yeah. And this can have ripple effects on things like employee morale, career advancement,
right.
and even innovation within an industry.
Interesting.
You know, if people are afraid to take risks or explore new opportunities because they're worried about forfeiting their commissions,
right.
it can really stifle creativity and progress.
So there's definitely some broader economic and social implications to consider here.
Yes.
That go beyond the legal aspects of the case itself.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's something that, lawmakers, industry leaders, and legal professionals should all be thinking about as they navigate this ever-evolving landscape of employment contracts and compensation structures.
That's a great point. It's really it really makes you think about the bigger picture here and how these legal decisions can have far-reaching consequences.
Absolutely.
This has been a truly illuminating discussion.
Well, thank you.
I really appreciate you walking us through this case.
Sure, it's my pleasure.
And the nuances of unconscionability.
Of course.
So before we sign off, what's the one big takeaway you hope our listeners will glean from this deep dive?
I think the most important takeaway is that while the Ali case might seem like a win for employers,
right.
it actually offers some valuable insights for both sides of the employment contract equation. So for employers, it underscores the importance of clear and concise drafting
yeah.
a fair and transparent negotiation process
right.
and a solid understanding of industry standards.
Okay.
And then for employees, it emphasizes the need to be proactive, to ask questions
right.
and to really think through the potential risks and rewards before signing any agreement.
Great advice.
Yeah.
And I think that applies not just to employment contracts, but to any legal agreement that you might encounter.
Absolutely.
You know your rights, read the fine print, and don't be afraid to negotiate terms that protect your interests.
Couldn't agree more. At the end of the day, a contract is only as strong as the understanding and agreement between the parties involved.
Well said.
Yeah.
And on that note, we'll wrap up our deep dive into American Software, Inc. v. Ali. We hope this discussion has given you, a clearer understanding of unconscionability and how it plays out in the real world of employment contracts.
It's a fascinating topic.
It is. It is. And it's something that I think, we could probably talk about for hours.
Definitely.
But for now, we'll leave it there. And for all you legal eagles out there, keep those contracts airtight and your clients informed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp and stay curious.
Sounds good.
Now, I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier, industry standards.
Okay.
So the court in the Ali case, they noted that these commission forfeiture clauses are pretty common, actually, in sales contracts.
Great. Yeah.
So how much weight does that factor carry when a court is trying to decide if a contract term is unconscionable?
It's definitely a significant consideration.
Oh, yeah.
Courts generally want to uphold contracts that kind of reflect the standard practices in a certain industry.
Right.
They don't want to, come in and rewrite contracts or impose their own ideas of fairness. If the terms are basically in line with what's considered acceptable in a particular field.
So if everyone's doing it, it's probably okay.
Well, not necessarily. It's not quite as simple as that. Just because something is common practice doesn't automatically mean that it's fair or legally sound.
Right.
But it does give the court some important context.
Uh-huh.
They'll really look at whether the particular clause in question, is it consistent with industry standards? Does it reflect a reasonable allocation of risk
right.
between the parties involved?
So it's almost like the court is saying, like, hey, if you're playing by the generally accepted rules of the game,
mm-hmm.
we're not going to step in and change those rules just because one of the players is unhappy with how a particular play turned out.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
All right.
The court is basically trying to find that balance, right, between protecting employees from contracts that are really unfair or exploitative,
mm-hmm.
While also upholding the basic idea of freedom of contract.
Okay.
That parties should be free to make their own agreements as long as they're not doing anything illegal.
This case really highlights, I think, how important it is to not only understand the legal principles,
right.
but also to really understand the practical realities,
mm-hmm.
the customs of the industry
Absolutely.
that you're dealing with.
Yeah, and I think for legal professionals, it shows how important it is to stay informed about industry trends and what the best practices are when they're advising their clients about contracts.
All right. Before we wrap up, I have one final question that's been kind of nagging at me.
Okay.
This case really zeroes in on the fairness and the legality of the contract itself.
Yeah.
But what about the bigger picture? Like, what impact do these types of commission structures have?
Right.
Especially these forfeiture clauses on employees in the long run, big picture.
That's a really insightful question.
Yeah.
And while the court in this case was really focused on just the legality of the contract,
mm-hmm.
it does raise some interesting questions about what could happen down the line.
Okay.
Because of these types of compensation structures, especially for people in sales.
Did you give me some examples?
Yeah, sure. So for one, it can create a situation where employees might be reluctant to leave their jobs, even if they're not happy or if they have other opportunities, because they're worried about losing out on those commissions that they work so hard for.
So it's almost like a financial penalty for moving on.
Yeah, exactly. And that can affect things like employee morale, you know, people's careers, yeah, and even innovation in a certain industry. If people are afraid to take risks or try something new because they're worried about losing their commissions,
right,
it can really hold things back.
So there are definitely some broader economic and social implications to think about here.
Yes, absolutely.
That kind of go beyond just the legal aspects of this case.
Absolutely. And it's something that, you know, lawmakers, industry leaders, and legal professionals, we all need to be thinking about this,
right,
as we're navigating this constantly changing world of employment contracts and how people get paid.
It really makes you think about the big picture here.
Mm-hmm.
And how these legal decisions can have, you know, impacts that go way beyond just the case itself.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, it really seems like this case kind of opens up a Pandora's box when you consider the intersection of law and economics and even, like, ethics in the workplace.
It definitely shows how contract law, you know, it's not just about these rigid rules. But it's really a framework for navigating the complexities of relationships, agreements, and even these potential power imbalances.
This has been a really, really insightful discussion.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you walking us through this case and all the nuances of unconscionability.
Sure. It's been my pleasure.
So before we sign off, what's the one big takeaway that you hope our listeners will get from this deep dive?
Well, I think the most important thing to remember is that while the Ali case might look like a win for employers on the surface,
right,
it actually has some valuable lessons for both sides.
Okay.
You know, both for employers and employees.
Okay.
So for employers, I think it emphasizes the importance of, you know, making sure your contracts are written clearly,
mm-hmm,
that the negotiation process is fair,
right,
and that you have a good understanding of the industry standards.
Okay.
And then for employees, I think it shows how important it is to be proactive, to ask questions, and to really think through the potential risks and benefits before signing anything.
That's great advice. And I think that applies not just to employment contracts, but really any legal agreement you might run into.
Absolutely.
You know your rights, read the fine print, and don't be afraid to negotiate, yeah, to protect your own interests.
I couldn't agree more, you know. A contract is only as good as the understanding between the people who are signing it.
Well said. And on that note, we'll wrap up our deep dives into American software, Inc. v. Ali.
Okay.
We hope this is giving you all a clearer understanding of unconscionability and how it plays out in the real world.
It's a fascinating topic.
Yeah, and it's one that we could probably talk about for hours and hours, but for now we'll leave it there.
Yeah, great discussion.
And for all you legal eagles out there, keep those contracts airtight, keep your clients informed, and until next time, keep those legal minds sharp and stay curious.
Sounds good.